In spite of my mask, I was aware that the golden mist that enveloped Thiu Uba was much denser around these dokos than elsewhere. Thou confirmed I was not mistaken in my perception, but she was not then able to explain the phenomenon, as they were waiting for us. She led me beneath an archway of greenery and along a path, which ran beside small ponds. Here wonderful water birds frolicked and little waterfalls murmured. I found myself almost running to keep up with Thou, but didn't like to ask her to slow down. She appeared preoccupied in a way that was not typical of her. At one point, there was almost a catastrophe when I tried to jump, as much to amuse myself as to catch up with Thou. Due to the difference in gravity, I misjudged my leap and had to catch hold of a tree, which grew right on the water's edge, to prevent myself from falling in. Eventually, we reached the central doko and stopped below the entrance light. Thou seemed to concentrate for several seconds. Then she took me by the shoulder and we passed through the wall. She immediately removed my mask, advising at the same time that I half closed my eyes, which I did. Light filtered through my lower lids and after a time, I was able to open my eyes normally. I must say, that this brightness, more golden than in my own doko, was considerably uncomfortable at first. I was most curious now, especially since Thou, who was usually very free and without protocol in her relations with everyone, seemed to have abruptly changed in her manner. Why? This doko must have been 100 meters in diameter. We headed directly, although more slowly, for the center, where 7 seats, each occupied, were arranged in a semicircle. The occupants sat as though petrified and, at first, I thought them to be statues. In looks they resembled Thou, although their hair was longer and their facial expressions more serious, giving them the air of being older. Their eyes seemed to be illuminated from within, which was somewhat disturbing. What struck me most of all, was the golden haze, even stronger here than outside, which seemed to concentrate in halos around their heads. Since the age of 15, I don't recall ever having been in awe of another person. No matter how grand a personage, no matter how important he or she was, or thought they were, I have not felt intimidated by position, neither have I had qualms about expressing my opinion to anyone. To me, the president of a nation is still just a person and it amuses me that people regard themselves as VIPs. I mention this to make it clear I am not impressed by mere status. In the doko, all that changed. When one of them raised a hand to indicate Thou and I should each take a seat facing them, I was indeed awestruck, and the word is feeble. I could not have imagined it possible that such radiant beings could exist. It was as though they were on fire inside and emitting rays from within. They sat on block-like seats, fabric-covered, with straight backs. Each seat was of a different color, some only slightly different and others vastly different from their neighbors. Their clothes, too, differed in color, suiting each wearer perfectly. All of them sat in what we call on Earth, the lotus position, that is, the sitting position of Buddha, with hands resting on knees. As previously mentioned, they formed a semicircle and, since there were 7 of them, I reasoned that the central figure had to be the principal one, with 3 acolytes on either side. Of course, at the time, I was too overcome to note such details. It only occurred to me later. It was the central figure who addressed me, in a voice so melodious and, at the same time, so authoritarian. I was stunned by it, particularly since he spoke in perfect French. You are welcome among us, Michel. May the spirit assist and enlighten you. The others echoed, may the spirit enlighten you. He began to rise gently above his seat still in the lotus position, and floated towards me. This did not entirely surprise me since Thou had previously demonstrated this technique of levitation. I wanted to rise before this undoubtedly great and highly spiritual personage, as a measure of the infinite respect inspired in me. In trying to move, I found I couldn't, as though paralyzed in my seat. He stopped just above and in front of me, placing both his hands on my head, the thumbs joined on my forehead above my nose, opposite the pineal gland, and the fingers joined at the top of my head. It was Thao who described these details to me later, for at the time, I was overwhelmed by such a sensation, that the details didn't register. During the time his hands were on my head, it seemed that my body no longer existed. A gentle warmth and delicate perfume originated within me, emanating in waves and blending with soft music that was barely audible. Suddenly, I could see amazing colors surrounding the figures opposite me and, as the leader returned slowly towards his seat, I could see a multitude of radiant colors around him, ones I had been unable to perceive before. The principal color was a mass of pale pink which enveloped the seven figures, as though in a cloud, and their movements caused that wonderful, glowing pink to encircle us also. When I had sufficiently recovered my senses to turn towards Thao, she too, was surrounded with wonderful colors, although less brilliant than those around the seven figures. You will notice that, in speaking of these great personages, I instinctively use he rather than she. In explaining this, I can only suggest that the personalities of these special beings were so strong and their bearings so imposing, that I recognized more of the masculine in them than the feminine. I mean no offense to women, my reaction was instinctive. It's a bit like imagining Methuselah as a woman. However, women or men, they had transformed me. I knew that the colors surrounding them were their auras. I was capable of seeing auras, who knew for how long, and I wondered at what I saw. The leader had resumed his seat and all eyes were fixed on me, as if they wanted to see inside me, which indeed, is what they were doing. Silence reigned for a time, which seemed interminable. I watched the varied colors of their auras vibrate and dance around them, sometimes far in the distance, and recognized the bouquet of color Thao had spoken of earlier. The golden halos, clearly defined, were almost saffron-colored. It occurred to me, they could not only see my aura, but possibly read it as well. I suddenly felt quite naked before this learned assembly. The question that haunted me was, why have they brought me here? Abruptly, the leader broke the silence. As Thao has already explained to you, Michelle, you have been chosen by us, to visit our planet, in order to report certain messages and to offer enlightenment on several important issues when you return to Earth. The time has come when certain events must occur. After several thousand years of darkness and savagery on the planet Earth, a so-called civilization appeared and, inevitably, technology was developed, a development, which was accelerated during the last 150 years. It has been 14,500 years since a comparable level of technological advance existed on Earth. This technology, which is nothing compared with true knowledge, is nevertheless, sufficiently advanced to become harmful to the human race on Earth in the very near future. Harmful, because it is only material knowledge and not spiritual knowledge. Technology should assist spiritual development, not confine people, more and more, within a materialistic world, as is happening now on your planet. To an even greater extent, your people are obsessed with a single goal, affluence. Their lives are concerned with all that the pursuit of wealth entails: envy, jealousy, hatred of those richer and contempt for those poorer. In other words, your technology, which is nothing compared with what existed on Earth more than 14,500 years ago, is dragging your civilization down, and pushing it closer and closer to moral and spiritual catastrophe. I noticed that each time this great personage spoke of materialism, his aura and those of his acolytes flashed with a dull and dirty red, as though momentarily, they were in the middle of burning bushes. We, the people of Thiouba, are assigned to assist, guide and sometimes punish the inhabitants of planets under our guardianship. Fortunately, Thao had briefed me on Earth's history during our journey to Thiouba. Otherwise, I'd have surely fallen off my seat on hearing such a speech. I think, he resumed, that you already know what we mean by harmful to the human race. Many people on Earth believe atomic arms to be the major danger, but it is not so. The greatest danger concerns materialism. The people of your planet seek money, to some it's a means of attaining power, To others it's a means to acquire drugs, another curse, yet to others, it's a way of possessing more than their neighbors possess. If a businessman owns a large store, he then wants a second, then a third. If he commands a small empire, he wants to increase it. If an ordinary man owns a house in which he could live happily with his family, he wants a larger one or to own a second one, then a third. Why this folly? Besides, a man will die and have to abandon all he has amassed. Perhaps his children will squander his legacy and his grandchildren will live in poverty. His whole life will have been preoccupied with purely material concerns, with insufficient time allowed for matters of the spirit. Others with money turn to drugs in their endeavor to procure an artificial paradise, and these people pay more dearly than do the others. I see, he continued. I am going much too fast and you are not following me, Michel. You should be able to follow, however, since thou has already initiated your education in these matters during your voyage. I felt ashamed, almost like when reprimanded by a teacher at school, the only difference being, here I was not able to cheat by saying I had understood when it wasn't true. He could read me like an open book. He deigned to smile at me, and his aura, which had been flaming like a fire, returned to its original hue. Now, once and for always, we will teach you and provide you with what you French call the key to the mystery. As you have heard, in the beginning there was the Spirit alone, and he created, by his immense force, all that exists materially. He created the planets, the suns, plants, animals, with one goal in mind, to satisfy his spiritual need. This is quite logical since he is purely spirit. Already I see you are wondering why the need to create material things in order to attain spiritual fulfillment. I offer this, by way of explanation. The Creator sought spiritual experiences through a material world. I see you still have difficulty following, but you are making progress. In order to have these experiences, he wanted to embody a tiny part of his spirit in a physical entity. To do this, he called on the fourth force, the force which thou has not yet spoken of and which concerns only spirituality. In this domain, the universal law also applies. You most certainly know that the pattern of the universe dictates that nine planets revolve around their sun, dash their sun. Sometimes nine planets revolve around two small suns. Twin star, explanation of the author on request of the editor. It is also the case that these suns revolve around a bigger sun, which is the nucleus for nine such suns, and their nine planets. So it continues, right to the center of the universe from where the explosion referred to by the English as the Big Bang originated. Needless to say, certain accidents occur and sometimes a planet will disappear in a solar system, or perhaps enter it, but later in time, the solar system will revert and base its structure again on the number 9. The fourth force had a very important role to play. It had to bring to fruition all that the spirit had imagined. It inserted thus, an infinitesimal part of the spirit in the human body. This comprises what you could call the astral body, which forms 1/9 of the essential human being and consists of 1/9 of a higher self, which is sometimes called over-self. The higher self of man is, in other words, an entity which sends 1/9 of itself into a human body, becoming the person's astral being. Other physical bodies are inhabited, similarly, by other 9ths of the same higher self, and yet each part remains integral to the central entity. Central entity, it means that each of us shares a higher self with 8 other people on Earth. Explanation of the author on editor's request. Further, the higher self is a 9th part of a superior higher self which, in turn, is a 9th part of a more superior higher self. The process continues as far back as the source, and allows the enormous filtration of spiritual experience required by the spirit. You must not think that the higher self of the first category is insignificant in comparison with the others. It functions at a lower level, but is nevertheless extremely powerful and important. It is capable of curing illness and even resuscitating the dead. What is known on Earth as spiritual healing, can be achieved with the help of the higher self of the healer, without the patient being present. However, providing the patient gives permission, the competent healer can assist the patient from anywhere in the world. Authors comment. This is not an exchange of energy but exchange of information at the level of higher selves. Editors comment. Exactly the same is said in the books from Lobsang Rangpa. Ro comment, there are many instances of people, declared clinically dead, who are brought back to life in the hands of doctors who had abandoned all hope for them. What generally happens in these cases, is that the person's astral body meets with the higher self. This portion of the higher self has left the physical body during the period of death. It perceives its physical body below, and the doctors trying to resuscitate it. It can also perceive loved ones who mourn for it. In his present state, the astral body, the person will feel perfectly well, even blissful. Usually he abandons his physical body, frequently the source of much suffering, to find himself catapulted down a psychic canal, at the end of which is a wondrous light and beyond, a state of bliss. If before passing through this canal into the blissful light which is his higher self he has the least will not to die, not on his own account but for the sake of those who need him, young children for example, he will ask to return. In certain cases it will be permitted. You are in constant communication with your higher self by means of your cerebral canal. Acting as a transmitting and receiving post, it conducts special vibrations directly between your astral body and your higher self. Your higher self monitors you continually, by day and by night and can intervene to save you from an accident. Someone, for example, who is to catch a plane, finds that the taxi breaks down on the way to the airport, a second taxi called also breaks down, just like that. Just like that? Could you really believe in such a coincidence? The plane in question crashes 30 minutes later, leaving no survivors. Another person, an old and rheumatic woman and barely able to walk, starts to cross a street. There is a loud horn blast and a screeching of tires, but this person is miraculously able to leap to safety. How is this explained? It was not yet her time to die and so her higher self intervened. In 1/100th of a second the higher self triggered a reaction in her adrenaline glands which, for a few seconds, provided enough strength to her muscles to enable her to execute the leap which saved her life. Adrenaline released into the blood can make it possible to flee from imminent danger, or to defeat the unbeatable through anger or fear. In too strong a dose, however, adrenaline becomes a lethal poison. It isn't only the cerebral canal which is able to conduct messages between the higher self and the astral body. Another channel exists sometimes in dreams, or, I should even say, in sleep. At certain times during sleep, your higher self is able to call your astral body to itself and, either communicate instructions or ideas, or to regenerate it in some way, replenishing its spiritual strength or enlightening it in regard to solutions to important problems. For this reason, it is essential your sleep is undisturbed by intrusive noise or by nightmares resulting from harmful impressions received during the day. Perhaps you will better understand the importance of your old French saying, "Night brings counsel." The physical body in which you exist at the moment is already very complex. But still, it is nothing compared with the complexity of the process of evolvement which occurs with astral bodies and higher selves. In order to allow ordinary people on your planet to understand as easily as possible, I will make my explanation in the simplest terms. Your astral body, which inhabits every normal human being, transfers to its higher self all the sensations that are experienced during a lifetime in a physical body. These sensations pass through the immense filter of 9 higher selves before arriving in the etheric ocean that surrounds the spirit. If these sensations are based essentially on materialism, the higher selves have enormous trouble filtering them, just as a water filter clogs quicker if it filters dirty water than if the water was already clear. If, through the numerous experiences you have in your life, you ensure your astral body benefits in a spiritual sense, it will acquire more and more spiritual understanding. In time, which can vary from 500 to even 15,000 of your Earth years, your higher self will have nothing more to filter. This part of itself, embodied in the astral being of Michel Dismarck, will be so spiritually advanced, it will have arrived at the next stage where it will have to contend directly with the more superior higher self. We can compare this process with a 9-stage filter, intended to rid the water passing through, of 9 elements. At the end of stage 1 in the process, 1 will have been completely eliminated, with 8 remaining. Of course, to make this information easier to digest, I am making enormous use of imagery. This astral body then, will have completed its cycle with the higher self of the first category and will then detach itself from higher self number 1 to rejoin the higher self of the second category. The entire process will be repeated. By the same token, the astral body will be sufficiently spiritually advanced to pass to a planet of the next category, as well. I see you are not following me very well, and I am anxious that you will understand absolutely all that I explain to you. In his wisdom, the Spirit, by means of the fourth force, provided for 9 categories of planets. At present, you are on the planet Thiuuba, which is in the 9th category, that is, at the top of the scale. Earth is a planet of the first category and therefore at the bottom of the scale. What does this mean? The planet Earth could be likened to a kindergarten with the emphasis on teaching basic social values. A planet of the second category would then correspond with a primary school where further values are taught. In both schools, adult guidance is imperative. The third category would comprise secondary schools where a foundation of values allows exploration beyond. Next, you would go to university, where you are treated as an adult, for you would not only have attained a certain amount of knowledge, but you would also start to accept civic responsibility. This is the type of progress occurring with the 9 categories of planets. The more spiritually advanced you are, the more you will benefit, on a superior planet, by an environment and general way of life which is superior. The very way in which you procure food is much easier, which in turn, simplifies the process of organizing your way of life. The consequence is more effective spiritual development. On the higher planets, nature itself enters the stage to assist the pupil, and by the time you reach planets of the 6th, 7th, 8th and 9th category, not only is your astral body highly evolved, your physical body has also benefited from your development. We know you have already been favorably impressed by what you have seen on our planet. As you see more, you will appreciate that it is what you would call on Earth, a paradise, and yet, compared with true happiness, when you become a pure spirit, it is still nothing. I must be careful not to make this explanation too long, for you must report it word for word, changing nothing in the book that you will write. It is absolutely essential you allow no personal opinion to intrude. No, don't get anxious, Thou will help you with the details when the time comes to start writing. From this planet, it is possible either to remain in a physical body or be reunited with the Great Spirit in the ether. As these words were uttered, the aura surrounding the leader shone more brightly than ever, and I was surprised to see him almost disappear in a golden mist, only to reappear a second later. You have understood that the astral body is a body which inhabits your physical body, recalling and noting all the understanding acquired during the course of its various lives. It can only be enriched spiritually, not materially. The physical body is merely a vehicle which, in most cases, we abandon when we die. I will elaborate, for I see that in most cases has confused you. By this, I mean that some of us, including all on our planet, are able to regenerate the cells of our bodies at will. Yes, you have already noticed that most of us seem to be of the same age. We are one of 3 planets that are the most highly evolved in this galaxy. Some of us can, and do, directly join what we call the Great Ether. So, on this particular planet, we have arrived at a stage near perfection, both materially and spiritually. But we have our roles to perform, as does every creature existing in the universe. In fact, everything, including a single pebble, has its role. Our role, as beings of a superior planet, is to guide, to help with spiritual development and even, sometimes, materially? We are in a position to give material assistance because we are technologically the most advanced people. Indeed, how could a father give spiritual guidance to his child if he were not older, more educated and more skilled in diplomacy than the child? If the child should require physical punishment, as unfortunately, is sometimes the case, isn't it important that the parent be physically stronger than the child? Certain adults, who refuse to listen and who are absolutely stubborn, also need to be corrected by physical means. You, Michelle, come from the planet Earth, which is sometimes called the planet of sorrows. Indeed, the name is appropriate, but it is this way for a precise reason. It is intended to provide a learning environment of a quite specific kind. It is not because life there is so difficult that you have to intervene. You cannot lightly go against nature, destroying rather than conserving what the Creator has put at your disposal, that is, interfering with ecological systems, which have been intricately designed. Certain countries, like Australia, where you are from, are beginning to show great respect for ecology, and it is a step in the right direction. But even in that country, what case is made of pollution, both water and air pollution? What is ever done about one of the worst forms of pollution? Noise. I say worst because people such as Australians pay virtually no attention to it at all. Ask someone if traffic noise bothers him and the response will surprise you. 85% of the time it will be, "What noise? What are you talking about?" Oh, that noise, we get used to it. And it is precisely because they get used to it that the danger exists. Just then, Thora, as this high figure was called, made a gesture and I turned around. He was replying to a question I had mentally posed: how can he speak of percentages and know so much about our planet with so much precision? Turning around, I almost uttered a cry of surprise, for, behind me, stood Biastra and Latley. In itself, this was nothing surprising, but the friends I knew who measured 310 and 280 centimeters in height respectively, were now reduced in size to correspond with my height. My mouth must have continued to gape, for Thora smiled. Can you understand, that sometimes, and very often in these days, some of us live among your people on Earth, and there is my answer to your question. To continue on the very important subject of noise, it is such a danger that, if nothing is done, catastrophe is certain. Let us take the example of a discotheque. The people who expose themselves to music that is typically played three times too loudly, are subjecting their brains and their physiological and astral bodies to vibrations which are so harmful. If they could see the damage that is caused, they would vacate the discotheque quicker than if there was a fire. But vibrations don't only come from noise. They also come from colors, and it is astonishing that, on your planet, experiments conducted in this field have not been followed up. Our agents reported a particular experiment involving a man who was capable of lifting a certain weight. It was found that editor's edition, after staring for a moment at a pink-colored screen, he consistently lost 30% of his strength. Your civilization pays no attention to such experimentation. In fact, colors can enormously influence the behavior of human beings, and yet, control of this influence requires that an individual's aura be taken into account. If, for example, you want to paint or wallpaper your bedroom with the colors that are truly appropriate for you, you must be aware of the colors of certain principal points of your aura. By matching the colors of your walls with those of your aura, you can improve your health or maintain good health. Further, the vibrations emanating from these colors are essential for good mental balance, exerting their influence even while you sleep. I was wondering how we could be expected to know these significant colors in our auras when, on Earth, we were not capable of perceiving auras. Of course, Thora replied immediately, without me having to say a word aloud. Michelle, it is now very important that your experts invent the special equipment necessary to enable perception of the aura, as this, in turn, will ensure that correct choices are made at the critical crossroads ahead. The Russians have already photographed the aura. This is the beginning, but the results obtained allow them only to read the first two letters of the alphabet, as it were, in comparison with what we are able to decipher.